The opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
This is what nice tea.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Wednesday, January 8th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day. Today, Aaron and I are teaming up. Of course, it's a Man Down Mashup Wednesday, where we usually interrogate the news, but we are interrogating Majority Rule Day. We are marching towards Majority Rule Day, the holiday, which is January 10th. Streets are going to be closed on January 10th, Friday, right? Where we celebrate democracy. There are people who question the narrative of what majority rules means, right? There are a number of persons who say that it has excluded several people, key people who helped majority rules come about. There are a number of concerns about white Bohemians. Mulatto Bohemians said that they are no longer included in the majority rule narrative, even though they spurred it on, they helped with it, they marched toward it. There are a number of people who said it does not necessarily include the other political forces, because the need itself has been adopted, end quotes, and I know Aaron can challenge me on it, owned by the Progressive Liberal Party and no longer have space for wider Bohemian populace to be included in that majority rule narrative. So we're talking about that. But before we continue, I know Erin has a shout out, and I had to remind her, because she ready to me remind her, and then she's getting ready to jump into the conversation and forget what she said she's going
to
do first.
Yeah, no, I have to do this because I want to send a shout out to Ms. Carolyn DeMerritt. Right? Carolyn DeMerritt is a friend of my auntie. If you all know my auntie, Helen Mitchell Smith, a.k.a. Bubbles, she was just a blessing to everybody she touched. Caroline DeMerritt worked with her, was one of her friends. And I met Caroline through her daughter, Nikki, who's made the best twists. Model Bakery, I ain't forget you. Yeah, I just have to adjust my belly, you know? And anyway, she's also a Fox Hillian. They are in the Fox Hill community. So I want to say good morning to my new auntie, Carolyn DeMerritt. I hope you're having a wonderful day, and don't let them wake you too hard in the kitchen today. Thank you, Mr. Nuri.
Yeah, ma'am, my pleasure.
Anybody who, Aunt Helen?
Love them. Of course. Make sure I give a shout out. Make sure you know they are loved. But let's start this segment of the conversation.
Okay. Back to what we started.
Yeah, but I want you to give some, and I love definitions. I give you some definitions so we can move forward.
Okay.
What is majority ruling? Guess get a round, because we corrected ourselves and we concluded. Right. Give me a roundabout definition.
I think you should do that, because I can tell you what I can tell you what I think it is. Majority Rule Day is end of apartheid in the Bahamas Day.
I have no problem with that. And I would call it Democracy Day. Right? Yeah. I know we had a texter who texted in and give a definition, which
I think it's a sound definition. Yes. I can embrace that definition too.
And Democracy Day has nothing to do with the social aspects of black and white necessarily, even though we had that happening at the same time.
And then at the same time, it must do, right? Because what are the conditions that led to the unequal vote, right? What are the conditions that existed that perpetuate the state where not everybody could vote?
Yes.
And that has to be a part of the conversation.
One must appreciate that white women couldn't vote.
Yeah, because no women could vote,
yes,
white or black.
And then one must appreciate at one point in time, could not vote because they didn't have any property.
Right.
So they had rich black men who could vote,
mm-hmm,
right? But not poor every day. So it's majority rule narrative, mm-hmm, may have to be tweaked a little bit. So what do you call it? The suffrage.
Suffrage movement.
Yeah, but the general thing overall.
Universal suffrage
movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And perhaps we need to include that definition or put it juxtapose. Majority rule and that colon, universal suffrage movement, which will encompass everybody. They'll understand what it is we're talking about. So those racial undertones where people are uneasy about and who are attaching it. Because you know, at times when the Progressive Liberal Party tells their story, and they have a right to tell their story now. I'm not disputing their story.
No, this is to be questioned.
No, this is their story.
No, it isn't their story.
The Progressive Liberal Party don't have their own story?
Listen,
It's
the question is, was the achievement of majority rule...
No, that's separate. No, I don't remember PLP story.
Was it a party achievement or was it a national achievement?
No, we ain't talking about the majority rule no more. We're talking about the Progressive Liberal Party story. When they tell their story, they claim, see, I'm now going back to majority rule, they claim majority rule.
And as that's, a party as achievement.
Yes, a party achievement.
As opposed to a national
and
achievement.
And that may be a need for to be...
Interrogated.
But is it the duty for the PLP to say that? Or should the public, the academics, the historians...
Great point. Callers, hold the line. Great point. Is it the PLP's responsibility to clarify? No. It is the government's...
And that's why they don't.
No, it's the government's responsibility
okay.
to clarify. And so if the government at the time is a PLP administration...
Mm-hmm.
They have, that administration has a duty. If it's a FNM administration, they also have a duty, the administration, not the party, to clarify.
Let's go to the call, but let me say this.
Right? Oh, then we got to get back to our family islands, currently
yes.
living in an apartheid.
And also had their role in walking towards majority rule, right? Should white, I'm going to say white Bohemian women,
mm-hmm.
should they tell their own narrative or in terms of majority rule, or they should be demure and don't say anything at all.
They should talk.
They should talk. But they're afraid to talk. I'm not sure they're afraid to talk.
Okay, let's go to the phone line and we explore that too. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. Hey.
Aaron.
Yes, sir.
What did 1967 add to the democratic process? Women voting from 1962.
Mm-hmm.
The property voting rights, I think, had been dropped, I think, from 1958.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of democratic empowerment did 1967 give to the populace?
Reflection of the majority.
No, I mean, but you said people could now vote. People was voting. That's how they got.
Yes, remember, you're talking about individual dates. It's a journey. But it's a journey. You're talking about individual points, and I'm saying it's a journey. Each one of those other things culminated at 67.
Yeah, but I'm saying those things that culminated in that victory, okay? The reason why they didn't win previously was because of so-called women and black people who voted for the white people.
So
the fact that Bahamians had already had the so-called the right to vote. So 1967 didn't add anything.
But you're still not acknowledging the journey. You have to call 62, then 67, then 53. All of these are points of movement which culminated in 67, now we recognize the 67 date.
But 67,
culmination is giving everybody the right to vote, and that is not true because they already
To vote. It's more now than just the right to vote, right? It's the right to vote, and then we now have a truer, more accurate or authentic reflection of the populace in the House. See, here we are in 2025, and we still don't see an accurate reflection of society in the House. We are 50% plus women. And how many women we have in the House, Mr. Murray? Five?
We don't see that even in the number of white people in the House, right?
We have Clay Sweden, we have John Pinder, and we have Ryan Pinder.
That's
three out of 39.
Ryan Pinder is not a member of Parliament.
He is. So he's a member of the Upper House.
In the Upper House.
Yeah, but he was not elected. He was appointed. He's not an elected member of Parliament.
Clay Sweden, and then we have John Pinder.
Yeah, but I am saying, why I'm bringing this up, because our journey wasn't no different from any of the other Caribbean.
Only our journey important. The rest of Caribbean important.
But I look at Jamaica.
But no. I don't know. No. This is a sacred day. I can't talk to them other people.
No, but no.
No. Just talk to the Bahamas. Stick with the Bahamas.
Let's talk about the Bahamas.
Yes.
I try to hold on before you go on. Before,
do you think? Let me just ask this question. Do you think that the Bahamians are ready to elect a full, a phenotypically white Bahamian as prime minister?
Yeah, man.
Yes. If he's making sense.
Do you think if Brent Simonet was to run?
Who is Brent Simonet?
Brent Simonet.
Who's he?
You know he's a mulatto, right?
But I don't. But
he's just a phenotypically white mulatto.
But who's Brent Simonet?
The first thing.
But who's Brent Simonet?
He was a great MP.
Why are you talking to people before I born, man? Let's talk with people I know.
I don't know if I want to be PM. He's a great MP.
But I don't even know these people you're talking. Why y'all go back in ancient history? Let's talk about modern things. Who? Yes, even forget Adrian Knight. That's the next one.
I tell you all, we have a proper reflection in terms of color. We need some Asian people in the house now.
Aaron, if Adrian White was the leader of the FNM, the first thing the PLP could say, they can put us back in slavery. Or you're going to be told us of waters and hue of wood.
They just wanted to change.
If you vote for that white.
It's just a change in location. It's just from one plantation to the next.
But like other Caribbean countries. Who had the same thing? I just mentioned Jamaica. They have no problem of having a so-called white prime minister. But we have a problem. Some people in the Bahamas have a problem.
Are you saying PLP promotes a Clay Sweden that they will say in their party they put them back into toting water again? That you saying?
See, because here's the irony. Hold on. Here's the irony.
I talk about PLP.
Hold on. Caller.
The FNM would say that.
Caller.
The opposition will.
Caller. You know the people in Eleuthera toting water right now, right? You know the people in Long Island toting water right now, you know? You know the people in the Keys and the Abaco Keys and things, they toting water right now, right? You know the people in Auckland's Ragged Island in Nagua,
they toting
water right now.
All they need to try to do now is cutting down the wood for trees, and then they'll be back in slavery.
Well, look where you're going. Thanks very much. The lines are full today. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. I want to talk about Family Island and majority rule. And the Family Island number is 242-357-20. The other day, boy, watch me beat myself. I can go to the caller right now. Yeah. I can let the caller go. The other day, my good auntie remind me, I can give her a shout out soon, that Bimini looked like a shanty town.
You know,
I agree with her. I say yes. Bimini does look like a shanty town. You know, but like a shanty.
Sometimes life can look like a shanty town.
Yeah, sometimes, not all the time.
I mean, now that them gone, we hoping that it clear itself.
They bulldoze the whole place. My point
without
is,
permissions.
My point is moving towards majority rule and having a greater share of the economic pie. Is that happening on the Family Island? Are they having a greater share of economic pie, or there are segments of society that, when it comes to economics and influence and development of the Family Island, the Bahamians, black, white, Chinese, whatever it is.
I know one boy named Jack, he has a bay. We should ask him. Mm-hmm. We should ask him. But instead of economic inclusion, right, like this idea of economic inclusion, what about access to national resources?
That's, we can talk about that because, right. Coincidentally, let's go to caller. Pick it up, caller, right now. The minister who's responsible for the Family Island is a white Bahamian. From the Family Island.
Good morning, caller.
And Family Island's having a rough time.
It's horrible. It's horrid.
They're making shanty towns on the Family Island.
I'm telling you.
Well, go ahead.
Good morning, caller.
Just let me first, the whole Bahamas has become a shanty town.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to both of you.
Not my part of Fox Hill. My part of Fox Hill, you know shanty town.
Yeah, but you have
anybody buy that? Hold on, T. Allen. Anybody buy that home yet?
Which home?
No, the one that pop up right next to you.
See, shantytown is anything that's not built in an orderly type fashion, you know, under certain rules. Mm-hmm. So just the fact that you may have a prettier shack don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just a couple of points, right? Let me say my father was one of those phenotypically individuals from Long Island, from the Knowles clan.
Mm-hmm.
When the PLP was founded, he was already in his 50s. And I've had stories of the true history of what PLP is. But the question you have to ask yourself is a couple of questions I want to ask you, which your previous caller said. this what was achieved in 1967 that wasn't already achieved. We had one man, one vote, same man, same vote in 1962, which encompassed everyone. They went to the poll, they heard the arguments, and they made a choice. Then you come to 1967, they went to the polls, they made a choice. The choice resulted in the rules where you had two groupings of individuals with the same amount of votes. There was two individuals who made a decision as to slant it one way. So it wasn't the PLP won that election. It was two individuals who, through compromise, gave them governance. And so and the problem is that we continue to rewrite history, restructure it, and whatever else it is. From the so-called marketing of what we're supposed to have achieved in 1967 or 1973. And just for the record to know that Sir Lyndon Penland, just Lyndon Penland as known as at the time, opposed independence. And it's only when he saw the noise in the marketplace that he adjusted his position. And so it's like we want to say what it is. What is it we achieved? And so when they say this brought about what, economic freedom for us, what did it do? What it brought to us a choice? Because we already had the choice, and subsequently since then we keep making choices. And so the question is exactly what does this majority rule? What does it represent? Majority of people making a decision? Majority of people in the House of Assembly were being of a Negroid type environment? You know, exactly what it is. That's the definition we have to have, as opposed to having it politically adapted, and protected to the point that if you were to say anything else, they would become, that a political party would become belligerent to anyone else trying to say what it is when it's supposed to be our days. But the true history will show that the first time we had a complete choice was in 1969, when people made it who it is. Let me say one more thing. On the day of the election, right, when did the decision made for governance to change? It wasn't the day of election. It was the negotiation afterward. What day was that actual day when the decision was made for Brandon and folks? Mm-hmm. See, we don't want to tell the true history. What we want to do is have marketed positioning.
And we don't have talk about folks saying that they maybe he made the wrong decision.
Good.
Yeah, thank you, Seattle.
And I want you, I just sent you something to read, right, into the record, because few people appreciate the fact that the PLP voted against women's right to vote, right? And voted against, right? And I can read that into the narrative, because like I said, this is a journey. Mm-hmm. It was a journey that took different types of people of different demographics to come together to get to 67.
And there are different elements that make up this whole composed majority, right?
Yes.
Let's go to the phone line.
No, just read that first and go to the phone line.
All right. During the years 1959 and 1960, the movement gained considerable ground, advancing petitions and demonstrating publicly for the right to vote. In November 1960, this is the women's suffragette story.
Yes.
In 1960, Eugenia Lockhart and Dr. M. Taylor, chairman of the PLP, to London to present a petition to the Secretary of State for the Colonies. In January 1961, a select committee of the House of Assembly gave a report in favor of the right to vote for women, but with effect from January 1963. The PLP and the independents in the House of Assembly opposed the report. An appeal was made to the House of Commons in England again. On February 23, 1961, a bill to enable women to vote was enacted with effect from June 30, 1962. Bahamian women voted for the first time on November 26, 1962. Now, Mr. Nuri, I'm glad we read this because I know a couple of people who throw that around like a slur. Like, oh, y'all women voted against the PLP, voted against freedom in 1962. But if I knew that after Milton Taylor take two of the smartest women in the Bahamas to London, y'all turn around and try to embarrass all of us by sending one little sneaky lady, look here, dear Home Office. We don't know what these boys I'm talking about, but we ain't ready for women to vote yet. I would have been rallying the women to vote against y'all.
But then the women need to tell their own part of majority rule, that they're marched towards majority. Let's go to the caller there. Go ahead, producer Patrick, call it Garden Radio AM.
Yeah, we did miss that call.
We missed that call. No problem. And I just said, as the narrative of majority rule, different segments of the Bahamas needs to participate. They need to own it. It's not a PLP story. It's a Bahamian story.
It's right. It's not a political. It's not a political, a partisan political story, mm-hmm. right? It is a political story. It is the politics of the Bahamas and not the politics of the PLP or the politics of the FNM or the politics of the UBP. Let's go to the phone line, and then we can get back to yeah. what it means when we say apartheid in the Family Islands. Good morning, caller.
Morning, Miss Green. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm young. I'm a children, but I good.
Brother Nuri.
Hey.
We were talking, I was listening to y'all for quite a while, talk about majority rule. You know the majority of us of color are still not ruling.
Okay, so that means someone else of a different color is ruling.
Yeah.
Who is that? Who?
The high color.
It's still ruling?
Yeah, they're still ruling.
In the remember, this is majority. Hold on. You know, this is a political word. Majority is a political word. So you're saying that in our politics, right, it being a political word, that you're saying there's a different set of people are in our politics is ruling.
The 15% is still trying to rule those.
In politics?
The 85.
In politics?
Yeah.
That's happening now.
You'd be surprised to know who called the shot.
Calling the shots. Who are you calling? Not surprised. Tell me who calling the shots so I don't be surprised.
No.
So you.
But what I want to say.
No, I want you to tell me.
Think would be a nice person.
No. You can't move like that. I want you to tell me who is calling the shots in the House of Assembly that we don't know about.
Well, I can't get into that, sir.
So this is a secret?
I can't get into that.
So only you want to know.
A lot of the calls are not being made by the majority of us.
Okay, until we have substantive and effective campaign finance reform.
Thank you.
Then I will argue that your point is salient and deserves interrogation. Until we have campaign finance reform and the members of the House of Parliament and all those authorized to enforce adhere to the provisions that outline the Office of the Public Disclosure Commissioner and the gazetting of declarations. Until then, I think it is we have to put that on the table.
But Ms. Green, let me say this in closing, please.
Mm-hmm.
This argument, not this argument, this conversation about majority rule, I would like to recommend to see if you maybe can get Ms. Ruby Ann Cooper Darling on your show tomorrow morning to try and discuss it. I think she's very... Well, she has a lot to offer in this, with her even being the first woman to register to vote. You know, she has a lot of firsts behind her,
mm-hmm.
behind her name. I think she'd be a good person to bring on to discuss this.
Okay, we'll do. We'll work on it.
Please.
Thanks very much.
That way we want to celebrate the holiday. You have a lot of people celebrating the holiday and don't know nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another day off from work.
I agree. And that's what we're trying to correct now and have this conversation about. I'm reminded through a text says they are toting water in Bayontown, Eggleston, Bozientown. In fact, just take a ride around town and see where the public pumps are. The cars are lined up to the pump, collecting water in 5-gallon bottles. All of this is happening right here in Nassau.
New Providence.
Right? And I guess it's a pushback when I said that Bimini is a shanty town and they need to work on some things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nassau is a shanty town. But imagine if they moved those water pumps. What would happen? A lot of people won't be without water.
We would have a number of public health crises popping up in communities throughout the island.
The water pumps are there for a reason.
Right. In fact, universal access to water, it was one of the reasons as a young person I was proud to be a Bahamian. Mm-hmm. Universal access to education, universal access to healthcare, universal access to water. And I understood these principles as being important elements in the development of the nation. Universal access to education intends to end an academic operating in the Bahamas, and it is being resourced and policied. All it has done now is created a space of apartheid in the Bahamas.
I'm concerned about these gated communities popping up. And you speak about apartheid. I see in the future right? I mean, just being over-exaggerating, of course, that Bohemians won't be able to ride west, especially New Providence,
mm-hmm.
because of the number of gated communities. We have no reason to go west, therefore you can't go west.
We will
west.
Be policed yeah, out be policed. Of these communities.
But let's go to, and let's think about majority rule, all that. Let mm-hmm. me just go to the callers there, please. Producer Patrick, first caller through. Guiding Radio AM. Good morning.
Hi, hello.
Good
hello.
Morning.
Yes, I have one suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
With the House of Parliament, I realize that we still stuck between two parties, right? I call them political gangs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never seen a member of the opposition or a member of the governing party give any recognition to anybody that did anything that missed and left them behind their party line. So that's the problem that I have. I feel if we're all Bohemians, we're all supposed to give right where right is, and we call out wrong when we see wrong. But it's like they run this country as if they're two political gangs. Now, the DNA tried to come along and made a difference, but it's hard to really convince Bohemian people to try something new unless we have something like drastic take place into the country. What I see would be helpful in the House if we have the minimum of 5 or 6 from a constituency, and they run as an independent and they could get in the House. And their job would be just to represent the Bohemian people. No political ties, no party lines, nobody telling them what they could or can't say. They don't have a gag order on them. And I feel that would really put some highlight on what happens in that House and would bring light to what happens in the House. Because in all honesty, it's like they run the government to whatever they tell us it is, it's what it is. We have no way to research these things. We have no way to figure out if it's true or not. You understand? And I'm a young Bohemian that have kids, and I have a wife, and I want a better future for my kids. But the way I see this country is going, in all honesty, I've realized that when Ephraim is in power, everyone complains and says, we give the money to the Hollow Airport. We give everything to Hollow Airport. Now, the PLC is in power. Everybody is afraid to say who they backing, who backing them, who giving them the money. You understand? So it's like, I don't understand if we really want a better future or if we just put this narrative out there that we want a better future, but no one actually stands up for themselves. And then when we have people that stand up and say, we want to do better, it comes with another agenda. Because when you check these persons down, you believe in them because they can speak fluent and then they have some charisma to them. You believe in them, and then when you look next election, they get a senator job or some big position in government. You know, so what's the purpose of that? You know, okay. We don't have no one that could actually lead us as the head of the Bohemian household, a head of the Bahamas. We have people leading us, and they're leading for their own personal agendas. And that's the problem that we have, and that's why I think we could never make it forward. I lost all respect for the Prime Minister when he went before the United Nations and he called certain people a philanthropist. You understand? Because if you reflect, he was the lawyer for 90 years. He's never once stand up in front of Rutland and foreign jail. And yes, he might have did some wrong, but he ain't did everything wrong that y'all said he did. He then did his time over 20 years. And no one's advocating for him to come home. And there's plenty of ways you could have twisted. You could have said this guy could help the younger generation because he's already been through it. You could have said he cleaned his path. People in America go to jail for leading gangs that kill hundreds of people. And they get rehabilitated and they get released back out into the street. But we ain't advocating for a person that was kidnapped out of our country and sent to another country.
Kidnapped.
You understand what I'm saying? And even though we might say, yeah, but he did some wrong, but there are a lot of people that did wrong that get less time.
I appreciate you calling.
Are we actually standing up for ourselves or are we just standing up for an agenda? You know what I mean? And who sets the agenda?
Thank you very much, caller. I ain't know about nobody getting kidnapped, but it is what it is. The phone lines lit up. You want to go to the key, continue to let them speak?
Yeah, and we can talk about Family Island apartheid in a moment.
Yeah. Go ahead, call him. Call Green once. Go ahead, call him.
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Green and Mr. Nui.
Morning,
yeah.
Morning.
Yeah, I love what the young man was saying, and I could feel what he's feeling. And so, you know, young people, they're not going to stay sane. I wanted to share some quick history. Did you know that Sahari Oaks was one of the first people to put standpipes in the ghetto for black people.
You think that's why they did that to him?
I said it's called those pipes that you, the water, the water mains that provide water for the inner city people.
Yeah.
Yes, Harry Oaks, they used to call them standpipes back in the days.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one of the things that he was accredited for, along with helping us attain property, et cetera, et cetera. But what I wanted to touch on...
What I was saying was, do you think that that's why somebody decided to unalive him?
Well, when you read the book, you will notice really it's deep and it's involved. You could still get killed for even talking about it to this day. Because don't forget now, two reporters that came down from London poking their noses. One was found in the Blue Hole by Aaron Bailey, and another was found someplace there on Bay Street. The book is actually... What I'm saying, when you read the book and you see they haven't made a movie out of it, then you know that it's really the ruling class that suppressed this history. But it's really, it should have been a movie a long time ago, because it talks about Meyer Linsky and all the link up with Life of Key and all these different things there. But I want to get on with something that with the suffragette movement that was in England. So one of the things I was appalled about and I could remember was that the ladies were not allowed to vote until they were 30 years old. And it's about 1918, but I think they got equal with men. But before that, they had to be 30 years old, and they had to own property. And there was a lot of bureaucratic BS that still exists today. So I guess at 30 years old, they half dead. So now, I mean, back in those days, so what I'm saying is, I guess maybe it was 18 for here. I want someone to verify that. Because that is nothing to be proud of. You wait till a woman 30 years old to allow them to vote. I just wanted to throw that embarrassment back in their faces. And I'm glad that you guys mentioned Dr. Donaldson, who I had many conversations with, and as a man of the men to me. And a lot of things that I learned from him, and he said that I form my opinion of the ruling class that I can't say on the radio. But what I'm saying is, what hurts me in calling talk shows is, it's useless calling if people want you to say what they want you to say. Then talk show is futile. Give thanks.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller there. Let's patch that through there. Kermit, go ahead, caller. Can you hear us?
Yeah, good day, Aaron. You know, I love you. You always hit on the points. Here it is. I just wanted to say something about the constitutionality of what you were saying about removing the prime minister for the past 2 days. I want you all to pay attention to the word derogate, because
Repeat the word.
Derogate. Derogate. D-R-O-G-A-T. You see. Because you mentioned what Sir Michael said about the section being odious.
Yes.
Right? And here it is, even though they said that the Constitution goes, the situation with the going to the party, the Constitution strictly said he had two choices, resign or dissolve the House. That's a strict interpretation, right?
Repeat that. I had to go look up derogate to make sure I remembered it the right way.
Right, but what I'm saying is that it said that after the vote of no confidence, he has two choices.
Yes. Resign or dissolve.
7 days. Yeah. Right. It didn't give him no other choice. We go back to no party. So that is where we are. And then the Governor General had the other options. So in that setting, the House is not prorogued, right?
I mean, following your argument.
Yeah. With the vote of no confidence, the House is still in session.
Yes.
You see? So there is where the power of the GG, Governor General, comes in.
When the recommendation is sent. I mean, I think it's paused then. I'm waiting, and the Governor General waits until there's a decision within the House.
Now,
7 days.
Right, but now, Professor Morris's contribution to the discussion is just that, asking us to interrogate the powers of the and the authority and discretion of the Governor General in these instances, and queries whether we are misinterpreting. So I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah, so we don't need to convolute the leader of the party with the leader of government as the PM. The Constitution gives you two choices, and after that, the GG, who is the leader of the state as the representative of the Crown.
Okay. Thank you. That's very interesting. Thank you. I
just want to remind people that Governor General said not to be acrimonious against the sitting government, right? Because the Governor General is appointed, recommended. You just replace them. You know, if they want to be difficult, you replace them. and get someone who's more.
This is language you use if they want to be difficult. It's like, let me show you why. Just a quick, since we're talking
Can we replace the governor?
I'm going to read this from this article. PM defends decision on two deputy commissioners, right? And at the end of it, you know, the Prime Minister just spent all this time throwing shade. I was hoping for a legal explanation as to why the two deputy commissioners, but he said he's disappointed. I was disappointed, quote, I was disappointed, though not terribly surprised, to learn that the leader of the opposition has chosen to be in full attack mode rather than playing a more constructive role, quote, said Davis, right? And then he goes on to throw some more shade. I am confident that the Bahamian people are rooting for the RBPF's new leadership team and praying that they will find only success in their efforts to change and reform the force. So you want them to not find the failures, mm-hmm. only find the successes. Mm-hmm. Okay, no problem. To fight gangs, violence, and disorder, and to restore trust in our communities. Quote, Michael Pintard should do the same, close quotes. When they appointing the commissioner of police, it doesn't the leader of the opposition also advise, right? Like, doesn't he also, like,
the PM informs the leader of the opposition?
No. We get no. Pause.
The leader of opposition has no say.
No, he does have a say.
He has a say to say, okay, that's what happened. He can't object.
There is a space for objection. See, this is why.
Then we say noted, and then you continue.
Dear sir, first of all, I was going to crack a joke, but I ain't going to crack it no more. Second of all, if the Constitution provides a space for the leader of the opposition to be consulted, that consultation should take place. That consultation should be considered. That is separate from the PM having discretion to be able to ignore that, right? The PM could ignore it. He could respond to it, but he shouldn't suggest that the leader of the opposition, there's no space for him to speak.
I see your point.
Yeah.
And you're saying that the Prime Minister erred due to his criticism.
No, the tone of the criticism.
Because
it suggests that he should.
The leader of opposition have a right to comment or give critique.
It suggests that he shouldn't say anything unless he's prepared to lotion. And I don't know Pintard to be a lotion salesman.
Mm. Okay. Nothing wrong with that. But let's continue. Let's talk briefly about the Family Island and majority rule. And the concern we are having on what is happening on the Family Island, or what Family Islands are, Islanders are allowing to happen to them, right? We're going to take this quick break, but it just seems as if and we can pick on Bimini for a minute, because, you know, I had a post on it recently.
And
then broader, the whole Family Island.
We've had a major incident happen in Bimini, where several homes were destroyed or partially destroyed through fire, and we discovered that not only do they not have fire trucks, but they don't have insurance either.
Mm.
Many people.
And I find that it seems the Family Islands have to take the love or the consideration of other people, external forces, to get basic needs. School buses.
Like you're relying on forces to buy a school bus.
Yeah, to get a fire engine, to get
an
ambulance.
And this time, we still haven't gotten the expenditure report for the 50th anniversary.
We ain't never getting that.
Golden Jubilee Independence Celebration.
We ain't never getting that.
I ain't getting it, buddy.
You ain't never getting that. 5 years can come out. It'll be 2026 next general election, and you ain't gonna never get that.
I think it's fair to say either we get it or they don't get another term.
They can get another term.
A term of what?
I don't know.
Let me find some words. I'll give them another term.
Okay. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're interrogating the majority rule day, January 10th, what it means, what it should mean to the general broader Bahamian public. Why are we demanding that different segments of the Bahamas to give their own narrative majority means? We mentioned women's suffrage movement. They need to give a narrative. We mentioned the Free National Movement. They need to give a narrative. We mentioned the church. They need to give a narrative of majority rule and not have it be owned
By the political class,
yes.
By political parties. It is a national achievement and not just a partisan one-party achievement.
And we want to talk with Long Islanders in terms of their contribution of Majority Rule Day, in terms of their movement to have, in terms of Majority Rule Day.
And why they don't like the PLP?
They like the PLP. They have a whole section. When you go down north, all kind of PLPs there, and the clapboard hose is not leaning. Anyway, we're going to be right back. Guardian Radio AM with CA Nerd. All of them leaning too, right up north, down north. Anyway, we'll be right back. Everybody.
Pinder is carrying a new line of tile. The Sky series of porcelain comes in four colors: Sky Noir, Sky Azure, Sky Gris, and this one, Sky Glass. In this particular tile, I think you'll find coin gray, silver gray, cloudy, and gray. All of these are seamlessly blended to make the Sky Glass one beautiful tile. The Sky series of porcelain comes in two formats: 24 by 24 at 530 a square foot, and 12 by 24 at 525 a square foot.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. We're talking Majority Rule Day. Friday will be Majority Rule Day. It's a democracy day, I think. People have equated to being a racial holiday. What do they think? It's about race. And we're saying that it needs to be redefined because it's about democracy. And we're trying to get a proper definition of majority rule.
But let's be careful, mm-hmm. right? Because it is about democracy, but democracy is about the people. And when you talk about majority rule, you have to always ask, well, what are the conditions that we are removing people from by creating, quote unquote, majority rule? And if those conditions were a racial apartheid, if they were an economic apartheid, then race and economics and class are inextricably a part of the discussion.
I got a text from a Long Islander says, I just want to remind you that down north was the only part of Long Island that had like electricity running water until 1992.
That didn't or did?
That did.
Yes.
Remember, I said down north supports the big joke that down north is one that seems to be more impoverished mm-hmm. in contrast to up south now. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make Something went wrong.
Right, like in our modern history, it's 2025. Those of us who remember what was it, August 1992? Mm. What 1992 was like when Hubert Ingraham took over, and then people, and then subsequent to that, people talked about what they celebrate is we got light. Mm. In 1992, we got light.
Can August 1992 be an extension of majority rule? That they get freedom, but like a larger, greater amount of Bohemians get access. Remember the whole thing about this access.
Right, but access to national resources.
Yes.
If you say we putting lights in the streets, then everybody's supposed to get lights in the streets. But here's a modern extension of that. Remember when the first telecommunications company presented itself in the Bahamas and in its attempt to woo the Bahamian people, right, to convince the government that they were a good choice, they said things like, we commit to providing this service throughout the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. And here we are in 2025, and that company and subsequent companies that have been licensed are now looking in our face and telling us, how could you expect us to be providing these services in these spaces? You look at the bank the other day told us, hey, us being in the Family Islands is a philanthropic service. Mm. Kindness in my heart.
I have some
banking services in the Family Islands in 2025.
Yeah.
Not refusing to acknowledge that the people cannot reliably transition to online banking because the other set of people cannot reliably maintain the power supply. And the other set of people cannot reliably maintain the telecommunication services.
Hmm. I have another definition, right? But let me read this, right? So majority rule is a landmark historical day that is central to the idea that all of us have a say in the direction of our country. However, notwithstanding the progress we have made, too many Bohemians are not realizing their full potential. We should all celebrate, but it's difficult for many Bohemians to do so when they are struggling to put food on their table.
Without a doubt. Remember several years ago, maybe 7 years ago now, an article came out of the Jamaica Gleaner about creating more market, like how do you create a Mark Zuckerberg?
Mm-hmm.
And the writer talked about the conditions in which Mark Zuckerberg became Mark Zuckerberg. And it's about replicating. If children have to make a decision of whether they're going to stay to school to finish their homework because there may not be electricity on at home, there may not be water, there may not be telecommunication services, right? That child is likely to not ever be able to realize their full potential.
Mm. This person is criticizing majority rule, says majority rule does not rule, the majority does not rule as in the gaming referendum, the people voted.
Okay, in the gaming referendum, let's talk about it. The people voted without fully understanding what they were voting on. Same thing happened in the gender equality referendum, you know. The question was clear. It asked whether you wanted to regulate web shop gaming. It didn't ask you if you wanted to legalize it. And in this instance, the legalize is implied. If it's implied, then it means that it's already legal. And we were only asking you if you wanted us to regulate it. This infuriates me because sometimes the majority think just because they are the majority, they are right.
And before we go, whose job is it to educate, to define majority rule moving forward? We know the PLP has claimed today. They have given a narrative. They are staying fast on their narrative.
The academics.
Right.
University of the Bahamas.
Yes. And so when people complain today, they are uneasy with the term majority rule, that the word is...
Here's my thing. How you could be uneasy with majority rule and not uneasy with the politics that derived it? Y'all ain't uneasy with the politics?
They said they're excluding people. They're making people feel uneasy.
Who?
That's what the people said at the beginning. The German
so support. They can't form their own political party?
Yeah. But you concluded that UOB and the academics need to explain it to get us more involved. What about the FNM, the Free National Movement, and their definition of the majority rule, their narrative of majority rule? They seem to be lukewarm in terms of embracing the holiday.
Because they believe embracing the holiday is endorsing a PLP without even acknowledging that the PLP that achieved it is not the same PLP that exists today. In the same way, they have to acknowledge that the FNM that subsequently followed, that was formed subsequently following the, you know, majority rule, that this FNM today ain't the same FNM either.
Then what about the Family Islands? How should they celebrate? Well, they seem to be excluded.
They need to send letters to New Providence. And remember when the Governor General went to Eleuthera?
They don't complain
Eleuthera?
Enough.
You remember when the Governor General went to Eleuthera for our cousin Vera's 100th birthday?
Yeah.
And he brought a fruit basket from Nassau?
Yeah, and she said, what
she
do
with
this?
He brought a fruit basket from Nassau to the bread basket of the Bahamas.
I said, what she do with this? She wanted money.
And she was so polite with him.
Mm-hmm.
She was so polite. Mm-hmm. All she said is, I like money.
Yeah.
Because she know politicians understand that language. I've made that part up myself.
Mm-hmm.
But understand what was happening in that moment. You send someone down from Nassau to make him look like a fool to the Family Islanders. Talking about, look at your crown. Look at the kingdom coming to tell you happy birthday. Mm-hmm. We don't even know that this is where the pineapple come from, the mango, the sugar apple, the soursop, the hog plum, the scarlet plum, the mulberry.
You have a basket
the mommy
to support those things in, though.
The white dilly. I have white dilly on my tree. I tell you all the time, I understand segregation and what it means to be a bigot because I only eat white dilly.
Is it segregation on the Family Island? Are there still segregation on the Family Island? Is it segregation in Nassau, New Providence?
What was your experience in Long Island?
I like Long Island. I think they are together and apart at the same time.
Right, like there's an understanding.
There's an understanding. North and South are different, but they're together.
They're different culturally, but they're together on the island.
Yeah, like all Long Islands come together to do whatever they have to do.
Especially hurricane recovery.
However, North is North and South is South.
Mm-hmm.
They culturally different.
Mm-hmm.
They think different. They act different. They react different.
What are
they vote different.
I'm going to ask you, what are the demographics, like where you see the biggest difference?
Well,
not in what they do, but who they are.
Down North is Black. you can see the black population. Then there's a middle that is a mulatto color, clearly mulatto, where I talk brown. Mm-hmm. And then there is a white to near white mulatto and down south. Up south. And they're economically progressive and independent. They spending money. Right. They're doing things.
Now, up south and down north should be an indicator to people like of the culture of Long Island, that the people are still rooted in old culture. It's not necessarily a bad thing at all, because some people know that the map of the world that we're looking at today, that we look at it, we teach it, children in school, is upside down, right? The Europeans flipped it so they could make the North, right? They make Europe seem like it's important because it's at the top, but they actually flipped it. And so that language up south and down north, right, is a reconciling with a shift in culture.
You're right. But as we close, in Long Island, the North remembers majority rule. The North remembers.
Yeah.
This has been Guardian. Thank you very much, Aaron Green. As we march towards Majority Rule Day, which is Friday.
Please write letters, call.
Complain.
Be at the airport. Tell them.
Complain.
Fire truck.
Do we have any Bahamian song as good as this, by the way?
Well, I don't know if we have a Bahamian song that reflects, right? A time, a moment, in the way that this song does.
It evokes pride, nationalism.
Yeah, we got a couple.
Like what? Like this. I'm not like a jumpy up dancing song. I talk about pride and proudness.
You, Burma Road, when you understand dancing, the right.
Yeah, but that's dancing, man. I talk about, you hear this song and you tears come down your eyes and you say, this is about me. Do we have a song that equates this? That we can herald it, this represents the Bahamas.
Bahamian gospel artist, the song that he did for Kareem Mortimer's film Children of God, Bahamaland.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I hear the intro to that, that is bring a tear to my eye. It's beautiful.
We got to find it to play.
Yeah. Monty G, Bahamian gospel artist.
Yeah. Anyway, this is Lift Up Your Voices by...
Lift Up Your Voice and Sing.
They're saying by Bahamian descendants.
Weldon B. and Robert Johnson.
Yes. And they're the ground...
Stephen Dillett, the educator, the education advocate, and not the first member of House of Parliament, or they're all family.
They're all family, so we got to find which one's which. Yeah. which one's which. But Stephen Dillett's daughter migrated to the United States and they had these children.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, we have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.